Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Broadcasting from the Ante Up Studio, it's the longest running poker podcast for the everyday poker player with your host, Joe Scales.
Hello, A-Team. It's Friday, December 29th. Welcome to the Ante Up Poker Podcast, where every hand is an opportunity, every player is a friend, and every episode is a winning experience. I'm your host, Joe Scales, and this is the last Ante Up Poker Podcast of 2023. I cannot wait to see what 2024 is going to bring. If it's anything like this year, man, it's going to be a fun ride. In January of this year, we brought back the Ante Up Poker Podcast right here. I think it took some time for the original core of listeners to get used to my voice and my style. But most of you have come around, I think, anyway. We've also managed to bring in some new ears to the show. I'd love it if you guys would take a minute, give the show a review on whatever device you listen to the show on. Apple Podcasts or Spotify or iHeart. However you listen, just give us some love. That'll help us continue to grow the show. Also, this year was the return of the magazine. It had been absent since, believe it or not, March of 2020. But after getting the podcast moving in the right direction, I mean, that was the next logical step. It's a digital magazine, but it has so many more capabilities than any type of magazine you've ever experienced. We'll have the first issue of the new year out soon, too. Now, in 2024, we have the Ante Up Poker Tour Stops that we're working on, and Ante Up Poker Cruise is going to be relaunching out of Miami in October. And there are a few other things happening behind the scenes, too, that I don't want to say too much about until we get closer, but just know Elle and I are working hard to get you guys the kind of content and news that you want. In fact, if there's something you can think of that you want to see or hear, then send me an email at podcast@anteupmagazine.com. I promise I'll read it and try my best to figure out how we can make it happen. That's all I have, so let's get on with the show.
Find out what conversations are happening around the poker table with Table Talk.
We are back around the poker table with Elle. How are you?
It's that weird week in between Christmas and New Year's, so it is anymore.
Yeah. We also have Hal back for a second week. How are you, Hal?
I'm great. Happy holidays to all. Doing well back in Connecticut here.
Okay. And we have somebody that knows a little bit about poker as well joining us. We got Calvin Anderson. Calvin, how are you?
I'm awesome. Yeah. Happy holidays.
Yeah. You're just off of quite the run over at the WPT. We wanted to get you on and talk about some of that. Congratulations on your big win. But it wasn't the only one. You had quite a few caches at the WPT Championship there at the win as well, didn't you?
Yeah. I think I had some runs. I pulled a 50K bounty and the mystery bounty, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So yeah, you cashed the mystery bounty. You cashed an early event too, right? It's like a $600 buy-in. And
yeah, I bagged the overall chip lead in the 600, and I don't know what I took, like maybe 40th or 50th or something. But yeah, those big field lower buy-in tournaments are definitely my specialty.
And where did you end up in the championship?
I bagged 400K the day one, and then I just ran kind of bad. I think I lost like five flips day two or something.
Well, I wanted to get you on here and kind of go through some of the experience that you had, especially in that prime, and just kind of talk about the experience overall with the WPT. So first of all, let's talk WPT in general. What was the experience like? You know, how is that different than some other tournament series? And then we'll get into some of the other stuff.
Sure. Yeah. So WPT, I mean, first off, the win and the encore, I'm pretty sure they just pay the dealers the most of any other dealers. So their base staff is like super pro. Yeah. The hotel's, you know, pretty much the nicest one in Vegas. I mean, you know that also because I've spent a lot of time there, but you see like a lot of celebrities there, you know, like you don't see. I mean, some of them gamble at other places, but just randomly. You see that, but I mean, you just kind of know if you spend time there, it's just mellow, chill, cool. WPT did a super good job. I think, you know, they typically do. I would say I really like the WPT brand pretty much more than any of the brands. I think. I mean, it suits state. I mean, they do have some outside the U.S., but most of them are in the U.S. But yeah, I mean. The tournament was ran well. I remember, I mean, not to compare them to other places, but just like whenever they do payouts in these big fields, it can be really difficult to know like who got 900th versus 899 or something like that. And there was hardly any delays. Everything was like pretty close to on time. It was smooth. I mean, the whole thing was pretty smooth, I think.
I thought just the set in general, like how do they navigate that with you? Because you can tell occasionally when you're watching online, I wasn't there in person. But you can tell there's several other games going on nearby because you can hear the cheer from the rail close by. But did you feel like they took really good care of you as a player as far as, you know, giving you breaks when you need to get breaks or food or having things nearby or security? I mean, what does that feel like? Because that's what everyone is thinking. How does that work? You know, if you get to that final table, what does it feel like? It's different.
So we played – it was kind of – I don't think they expected this many people. So – we played down to 9 people, and then we went from 9 to 6 without seeing the whole cards. And I mean, I prefer that personally as a player, but I don't think that the people would—they want to see like how it goes from 9 to 6, you know. And there wasn't really any reporting on that, and there were a lot of people watching from like I don't know 36 down or something, and they did like a feature table constantly, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of people that, you know, were watching that and wanted to see it. So I think that wasn't like. They probably should have filmed 9 to 6, but because it got so many people, and then it took so long, they didn't really expect that. But yeah, when it finally did get down to 6, I guess we came back for the next day from 9 to 6, played that out, and then they reported on the hands later. But a lot of people were in the dark, I guess. But yeah, from 6 down, I mean, we basically I don't really play too many tables that go on that like film me basically, because I kind of avoid that to some degree. I mean, I'm not playing like the Poker Go 10Ks where they're filming the final tables and stuff. I don't really like all that stuff to the fame and stuff. I'm not I just kind of want to do my thing, I guess. But yeah, with 6 down, we did some interviews beforehand for they're gonna do like an episode or whatever. So some interviews, and then once we got there, mic'd us up. It was smooth. I mean, everyone had their like section of people that you could like put people in, and then there was a good bit of seating. I guess with WPT they want to have like the seating in the background filled, which I didn't necessarily love that, like kind of they I think, you know, they had like fillers essentially of people.
Interesting.
I didn't really like that personally because a lot of them didn't really know that much about poker necessarily. That is one thing that I would have changed. Cause like they don't know when to clap or not to clap, who, and they're like switching sides. And then like, you know, it's kind of a weird vibe a little bit. I mean, that's probably the only negative thing I think that I would say is like, if they're going to do the fillers, just like have them be followers rather than like yelling out random stuff. And, you know, which is, some of it was funny, but
sometimes that can be pretty distracting. And I was actually wondering, you know, from the perspective of lights and cameras, and then there's this guy in the microphone who's calling the cards. Like, does any of that get your space per se, because I was playing, it would take a significant amount more of concentration or just self-talk or whatever you do as a player to tone that out, you know?
Yes. So one of the things that I think that I did maybe different than other people is I was pretty particular about the people that were on my rail. And I kind of like made a group chat and I kind of said, I tried to be like as self-centered and an asshole as I am, even though that's super out of nature for me. I'm just like, look, this is like my moment. And like, I don't want you to talk to me unless if I come up to you. I don't want like, cause it's just pulling and pulling and pulling from like all their areas. So I just want to focus in on playing the game. And I had a few people there that like I designated to like put people in line. I didn't want people drinking on the rail and, or doing drugs or doing anything. It's just like, I want to play the tournament and try to win. And then I had a few people there that were like designated to like show me hands that had been played. And so, yeah, so like I was really particular about that. So I didn't feel everyone kind of understood what the deal was. And a lot of those people that were designated to like help me, we like swapped percentage before the tournament. So like they it's like a job essentially, right. You know, so. But yeah, the cameras didn't really bother me. I mean, for me, I think a thing in poker is everyone's concerned. You have like level 1, 2, 3, and 4 players. So like 1 is like, what do you have? 2 is what do they have? 3 is like, what do they think that I have? But you get to kind of a realization, I think, in poker is like, instead of worrying about the lights looking at you and being like observed, everyone else is feeling that, you know? So just being the observer instead is a better place to be in, because everyone's concerned about what they're wearing and what they're, you know, what they look like. And really nobody gives a shit, you know?
Right.
Like everyone is. So there's this concept. There's a clip on What the Bleep Do We Know. It's called the double split experiment, where they talk about how like particles change when they're observed versus not. So like, basically, like whenever you're watching someone else, they become defined by your observations of them, basically. And then if you feel like you're being observed by another person, you will become defined by the observations of what you think other people think about you. So if you just kind of like be the observer instead and just decide to like focus in on them instead, then like you're able to have like a limitless of like possibilities of who you are. And there's no rules kind of in the sense where you can just be like free in the sense where they feel the cameras on me. It's just a practice that you kind of like realize, I think in life also obviously, but in poker is that, yeah, I wasn't affected by it just because I decided to attempt to affect them more by it. Basically.
Well, that's an excellent strategy that we haven't heard from other players that we've talked to. I just know that can get in people's headspace and get and affect their play, right? And so I think essentially what I'm taking away from that, I want to read more about that experiment. And it makes sense because I can even think of, I have been a teacher for 15 years. I can even think of when I was being observed, my behavior was different than when I was just me doing my thing in my room with the door shut, meaning, you know, I'm sailing my own ship here, right? So it makes a lot of sense what you're saying, and just having practiced that enough, it sounds like you have, that you go into it with that mental space and preparedness that, no, this is what I'm choosing to do versus what's going to be happening towards me, right? It's awesome advice. And being yourself. I mean, Calvin, we haven't heard anything but amazing, wonderful things. Hal just loves you, loves hanging out with you, said he's had coffee with you, and just, you know, down-to-earth, genuine guy. And we love seeing that in the community because, yes, there are the people that are out there worried about their brand, worried about what they look like, who they're being supported by or sponsored by. And that's one of the things actually Joe and I said is like, Calvin, we want to meet him. We want to hear from him. We want to hear what his play is, but we would just like to get to know you better. So bravo for just being yourself and staying your course because it worked out.
Yeah, appreciate
but that. Everybody there at the final table seemed to be really good guys, but especially when it got the heads up with you and Aaron, and we talked about it a little bit before, but I mean, the interaction between you two really seemed to be like two nice guys just battling out at a poker table, but what was your experience here? Aaron seemed like he was genuinely good guy as well.
This table was, I really enjoyed it because everyone played fast and respectful and nobody did anything that was like absurd. The difference between like this and maybe the 10K, and I didn't watch the 10K, but most big blind tournaments, you have like these stare down competitions and like somebody will have like a trashy hand that like, they're like, oh, let me stare you down because you raise and I have deuce eight and I'm never in my life going to call here. But like, you know, I'm just going to act like I have a hand and it's a close spot to intimidate you and stuff. None of that stuff was going on by anybody. I didn't feel people, it was all genuine decisions. And, but yeah, Penson was super cool. I mean, he was laughing and joking and fun. And yeah, I mean, you don't get that oftentimes in these big blinds. And that's a big reason why I like to play the lower stakes is because people don't take it that serious and you can just like relax and chill. And because most hands kind of play themselves anyways, for the most part. And there's not like a huge edge you're getting by doing all these annoying things. I remember, I don't want to say who it was against, but I just played a hand where this guy raised like 10 blinds and every single street, there was no time mix, was like one full minute. And the hand totally played itself, whether it could have been 30 seconds total, but it was like 5 minutes. And it's like, the poker's, it can be pretty absurd with a lot of these Euros trying to balance their timing. And like, especially in early stages and stuff, it's a lot. But he was super cool. Like I said, you know, we ended up doing a deal heads up. And although, you know, I had an advantage and it was some people that were my friends on the rail were like, dude, why are you chopping? You know, like, and I like the guy. So, yeah, I don't really follow rules of, you know, like when I do swaps with people, I don't swap with people that I think are better than me. I swap with people that I like and that I'm friends with and that I think are good people. So, and that was the case kind of with him when we got heads up. We talked about a deal, but the numbers didn't really make a lot of sense because I had like a lot less chips and we couldn't really agree upon a number. And I was just like, look, let's just play. And then if we get closer, then it'll make a lot more sense. And then whenever we did, we worked out a deal. And I was trying to be respectful to like the broadcast and stuff to go quickly. But WBT also was accommodating and considerate of like the money on the line. And I think that they, you know, they did a pretty good job of letting us communicate and then still help facilitate. And then they did, you know, they used to, some of the events, especially at the World Series, they just don't allow chops at all, which is kind of unrealistic. It's different if somebody like is a Euro, an American, they're trying to manipulate taxes or something like that. But that doesn't happen to people, you know. Right. You could do that anyways. You could just lose to the person and let them win the whole thing or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, neither one of us were trying anything like that, obviously.
Hal even said he's seen some of that. I call it puffing your chest, you know, just some of that cockiness, some of that, you know, just trying to get under your skin before you even sit down, you know? So, you know, how do you see that in tournaments yourself? Do you see that everywhere you go as well?
What, the cockiness? Yeah, you see it everywhere. But in general, I thought it was a good crew. It was a good time. The Euros are definitely different guys. They know each other. It's almost like they have their clique, we have ours. But a lot of them were friendly and they got to know you a little bit outside the table, but not a lot with the Euro guys. It was more American guys I talked to. I did become table friendly with some of them, but there's definitely a line between the sand, and that's why we come. That's why it's WPT, and that's why we're all there. So I think it works out balance at the end.
So now what's next? What's next for you, Cal? And Hal, I know you were at the Mohegan.
Yeah, I went up there today. It was a small tournament. It was a 3-day thing the Mohican had to try and get back. They haven't had a lot of tournaments, so it was a small buy-in, but they were guaranteeing 75K, and there was 260 at the tables today with a line out the casino floor. I had to leave. There was no way to buy into that. They were allowing rebuys at the table. So you could get knocked out at the table, rebuy, and the people in the line are still waiting. The line was, I think, 200 deep, so we were on level 2 already. I thought I was going to sneak in a little bit late and, you know, sit right down into, you know, maybe a calmer field. But boy, I had to drive home. It was a 2-hour drive and I drove back home. So, you know, it was too long of a line if I drove home. We were actually talking about that in the line, the degenerate, you know, some of them are still waiting. They're going to get a little bit of chips at the end there and get to fire a few, but it didn't look worth it to me. But we were saying before, poker's hot right now. We were just talking about this. People are playing poker. Yeah. People want to hear about poker. I have friends at home that don't even play. I have a friend who's watching our podcast now, Brian Coffey, one of my best friends. He sponsored me a little bit to go out to Vegas, and he's a great guy. He loves poker stories. People want to hear about poker. The old lady's asking me now at the deli, the kids at the gas station. They want to hear poker stories. They want to hear bad beats. They want to hear what you're doing. And anywhere you go now, poker's hot. So that's a good thing in the poker community.
100%.
We just had breakfast with my cousin who came in from out of state, and he was like, I've got 7 days until I have to be back at work. Where should I go? And Joe and I were trying to give him some ideas of places to hit up and tables to go to. And it's good to hear that the game is growing and thriving. And I think that's really exciting. What do you find, Cal?
It's interesting because you have like a lot of people that have played poker for a while. It's kind of like the older crew, they feel that they have experience of like live reading people and like knowing how to play the game for a while. So like they think that they're, and then you have the younger crew that like they're studying all these solvers and they're like, oh, mathematically, like I can win because I know the right, you know, board textures to check raise and all these like random things that they're like studying and whatnot. But, and then there's like a kind of a middle ground, I guess, where I lie, where I'm kind of like doing a little bit of both, but there's just a ton of differing opinions, which creates, I mean, in the beginning of when I started playing, I liked poker just because people were willing to bet money on it. And there's like all these games that are existing, but nobody's really bet on any of them, you know? So yeah, it's definitely popping off super hard everywhere in the world with so many training sites and so much access to information. It's a cool time. And nobody's like necessarily wrong with the edge that they think that they have too. So, I mean, anybody right. can win.
It could be difficult to play against some of those players that don't play every day because they're playing King 3, you have Ace King, and it's a King 3-5 flop, and you're dead right to the end where your raise pre-flop would have knocked that King 3 off the hand, and you go out to certain places where there's a lot of action, a lot of play. People see an ace, they see a king, they see a suited king or ace, and they're playing that hand, and you can get stung with them or you could stack up against them. That's the game of poker, and I think it's you got to have all those strategies under your belt or you're never going to be a good all-around player, I feel.
True.
Texas Hold'em is it's hard to find like a game where you have kind of somewhat of a neutral edge and so many different opinions on, and for it to be alive still after so many years is like a really, really beautiful game, I guess. I mean, I guess some people are moving to PLO a little bit more, but in general, like Hold'em has been dominant, which is, yeah.
You know, people are flying in from all over. You mentioned people are coming in from Europe. They're flying in all from the US. How do you guys stay healthy? What do you do? Being Joe's wife, I of course try to pump as much vitamin C, and we try to make sure we get our workouts in and hydrate. And I, you know, he even asked this time, like, hey, you know that thing you take with us when we go to Mexico or we go to Europe? Can you throw it in my suitcase? And I'm like, yeah, take all this stuff with you just in case, right? Because you don't want to be somewhere and not have something you might need. But you know, what do you guys do to stay healthy when all these people are coming in from all over and you're sitting right next to them, elbow to elbow, and you're there sometimes for days in a room full of lots of people?
I spend a reasonable amount of time kind of studying health, I guess. So, yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I don't even know where to start, but vitamin C is obviously like super, super big. I think if you go there's something called liposomal. So liposomal is a process where you put like the vitamin C in the middle and then you bind it with like a MCT oil or some type of fat so that it becomes more acceptable to the body. So there are some things that your body just doesn't accept unless if you take an IV of it, basically. So that's kind of like kind of crucial if you're going to do a vitamin C. I think doing a liposomal form or glutathione, which is like the master antioxidant for that. Yeah, I mean, obviously getting like IVs and stuff are good. Infrared sauna is helpful to like just help the immune system function better. That's a big thing that I definitely do like at least once a week, just to get the toxins out. And getting rid of mold is huge too, that people don't realize. Like mold is it stops the immune system from working. So if you have mold, you're just like your white blood cells can't kill off stuff. It just stops them entirely. So that's an infrared sauna is big for that. Ozone therapy is something that I do. It's probably like another level up that you can do it in your blood and a lot of other ways, but it's worth looking into. But yeah, during the holidays, whenever so many people around, like stuff's flying in the air, and yeah, just having like a good protection case is like is going to be super helpful. Especially, I mean, I think almost everybody got sick at the WPT.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah,
this builds immune system. So if you're a poker player, you need to build your immune system. Most guys are eating junk food out of their backpack, and exercise they get is a walk from the Venetian deep stack back to the wind to the milestone at night. So you get a quick mile in there. But I got sick. I came home. I was sick. I'm feeling better today. I was down for 3 days and I'm feeling a little better today.
It's a crazy time frame because you take all of the viruses and the diseases and whatever from like everywhere in the world, and then like you just fly people in the airplanes and then come to one place where you have like all these things your immune systems aren't really used to, you know. So it's definitely a crazy time frame that we live at, and you know, I do think that you need some extra protection front with like, you know, the less, you know, the lack of vitamins in the soil and the food, and overall, you know, like we're not getting the stuff that we used to. And then we're also on top of it getting like a bunch of different diseases from, or, you know, infections from like everywhere in the world, which is crazy.
Right.
I just think it's another point to the tournament. Everybody always thinks the flashy and the exciting part and the at the table, but then they don't think about, I need to go home and sleep. I need to make sure I get my water. I need to make sure I eat a bomb breakfast that day. You know, we had a little funny thing with Hal while he was there. His oatmeal fell out of his backpack or something, whatever. And I was like, at least you had oatmeal and you're not reaching for Oreos or something. You know what I mean? I think any of those tips and tricks people are looking for as well, because they tend to do what they normally do every day. And sometimes that's not the best for their body.
They did have a great cafeteria. Cal, I don't know if you made it in there, but they had a WPT cafe and it was expensive, but they had good sandwiches. They had great chili. They had some, hats off to whoever made that chili for the WPT. They had great chili in there and cheese, and you could get some good food. It was pricey. We were saying last week how these guys will, myself included, you'll run to the rebuy cage, but it's tough to spend $5 on a banana.
I know.
I'll tell you that. You know what I mean? But you'll rebuy for $3K a few bullets without, you know, you'll run to that guy for sure. But they had good food, and I was in there a few times, and hats off to those guys for sure.
Yeah.
He raved about that chili for days.
It was unbelievable. It was a great chili. Wow. Real.
Yeah.
Well, listen, guys, I appreciate all of the time from all of you. And Cal, I don't think you said where are you headed next?
I haven't left Vegas in 3 years. So, I mean, I went to California a couple of times, so I might have played like one tournament out there. But I like staying here. I mean, so I just kind of like play the stuff when it comes here, but I might travel a little bit. Yeah. There's not a lot of reason. I don't see myself leaving the US. I mean, a lot of these, I think in the beginning in like 2000, whenever Black Friday hit in 2011, it made sense to like go outside the US. Nowadays, I mean, most of the value I think is in America. There's you go over to somewhere else and it's just a lot tougher. It's not really as profitable as it once was. And I've already traveled to like every country that I pretty much want to. So hanging out here in the US is where I want to be.
There you go. Well, guys, I appreciate you guys being on here with me. Cal, thanks for jumping on. Hal, thanks for jumping on as well.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
And Elle.
It's always good being around the table with you.
Likewise. And we will talk again soon.
Sounds great. See you guys soon. Happy New Year.
Now it's time for Call the Floor with Elliot Schechter.
Elliot Schechter is the poker room director for Rivers Casino in Schenectady, New York. He joins us each week to say how he would rule on situations that come up in your games, and he's with me again this week. Elliot, how are you?
Doing very well, thanks. I had a great holiday. No snow on the ground, so all was good. That was yours.
It was the same. It's been raining, but no snow, and it hasn't been incredibly cold, so I'll take it.
Agreed.
Well, hey, we have two things this week, because we have a Call the Floor that's sent in by Will Blanchard. But before we get to that, one listener asked for some clarification on last week's Call the Floor. His name's Jim Mattson, and he said because he's run into similar situations in different card rooms, and he's seen situations where a premature card, the turn or the river, not the flop, as we had last week, and they put the card to the side instead of shuffling it back into the deck. So his questions are, is that dependent on the poker room's rules? And if so, how do you make sure that each members of the floor are embracing the same rules?
Well, that last one is the age-old question for any business, poker or otherwise, on the planet.
Yeah.
But the clarification is good, and I appreciate Jim for sending this one in. Tournament games, the TDA rule has been changed and is now permanent, that the card gets shuffled back in immediately and the play resumes after the reshuffle. The previous rule, which is probably in effect in most rooms and especially their cash games, is putting the card to the side, but it's still put to the side to be shuffled in. So if you have a premature flop, you're obviously going to have to shuffle up right then. Too many cards are out. But if you have a premature turn or river, a premature turn is being put to the side. And generally, what would have been the natural river card after that shuffle, that river card would have been placed. And then the prematurely exposed card would be shuffled in before you deal a river card. A river that's set to the side is definitely shuffled back in. There's very few, if any, and hopefully none, that are putting a card off to the side to never be used again. That's not how it's supposed to work. The card, as part of the deck, is supposed to have a chance to play. As long as it's not in somebody's hand or in the discard pile, a live card theoretically should be in play for that hand. So anything set to the side should not be discarded completely. So most rooms are probably running both rules simultaneously. They're running the TDA rule for tournaments, meaning that any prematurely exposed cards are being shuffled back in immediately, which I completely agree with. The cards are all shuffled. They're all down. They're all random. They have no idea where they're supposed to go, and they are not predestined to go to a certain player or flop, turn, or river. So shuffling it back in affects nobody's hand and should be the way it's handled. Most rooms are probably keeping the cash game rule as it previously was stated, where it is set off to the side and any future river cards would be then played. Again, that was in keeping with tradition. Tradition doesn't make mathematical sense, and at some point, for clarity and unity, it needs to be discarded. So that's why getting the rules enforced in such a way that they're consistent across personnel and shifts is a challenge. We generally meet and talk about stuff, and we give reminders and try to make sure that things stay uniform. It's always a challenge. Everybody makes their own judgment calls, and everybody gets different information than what is necessary. I mean, you can hear the same set of facts, but if they're relayed to you in a different way, you could end up making a different judgment. That's how trials work. So, I mean, same thing works when the floor has to make a decision. We try to keep them uniform, but And hopefully we succeed at it, but not always, obviously. But that is a challenge. And yeah, it's easily noticeable because obviously floor calls are not common, and nor right. should they be. Obviously, the dealers and players should be efficient enough to keep a game going. So when somebody makes a different ruling on the same exact situation or what seems to be an identical situation, it becomes very noticeable. So let's give most rooms credit. Almost all of them are running uniformly. It's the fact that floor calls are rare enough that when we notice a different ruling being applied, it sticks out like the proverbial sore thumb.
Is there ever a point where you go over ones that you see, like review them with the rest of the staff and say, this is how this should have been ruled? Or
yes, having done call the floor for many, many years now, my teams have always come to me with a situation when something unusual happens. And then I will usually email it to the group and we'll talk about it. So it's pretty common. Most rooms do this. If they catch something that they haven't seen or if they catch something that is really unusual or is rare, they absolutely bring it to the rest of their team or to their supervisors or direct reports and talk about it and make sure that if it happens again, and hopefully it doesn't, that in those rare cases that it pops up, that they will be acting in one voice.
Right. I think that's the important part, is that even if there's something that wasn't ruled on the same as what another person would have ruled, then there's a meeting and a meeting of the minds, so to speak, and everybody kind of gets on the same page. I think that's yes. that's the best part about it.
Most assuredly.
Well, Jim, I appreciate you sending that in. I hope that all clarifies everything for you. And then Will Blanchard has sent in the call the floor this week, which he says it takes place in his small, friendly home cash game. And everyone is very deep. On the river, a player shoves for slightly under pot. Another player counts out a call in front of him, thinks for a long while, then says, "Okay, take my money," and turns his hand up in front of him. So is it a call, first of all? And what would be the ruling in the casino? And should the dealer stop the action to get clarification at that point?
Well, there's a lot to unpack here. Never mind the fact that you have a friendly home game that is incredibly deep. Doesn't sound particularly friendly to me. I guess it is certainly a group of people who don't take anything at the table personally when it comes to the cards, which is the way it should be. It's just cards. It's not personal. All right. So, player counts out his money, says, "Oh, take my money," turns his hand up. Is it a call? Certainly in that spot, yes. Absolutely. You're manipulating your chips and making a statement and a motion to do anything to get your opponent to either turn their hand over or divulge the contents of their hand. To not make that very specific turn of events result in a call, it would be incredibly unfair. That doesn't mean it would be the same thing in a casino. I mean, casino rules vary. I mean, some places have very cutthroat rules. And certainly before the unification of rules, such as Robert's rules or the old Las Vegas Hilton poker rule book, before they became much more unified, yeah, they would let players get away with stuff like this, and some places wouldn't. If I would catch this in a casino, I mean, you would hope that the dealer would stop the action. It's like, "Sir, are you calling?" I would make sure to protect the player who made the original bet.
Right.
You don't want him jumping the gun. And again, this is obviously a fair amount of Hollywood going on here. And what certainly would have been part of the game many years ago is not truly acceptable now. This is unclear. And yeah, since it's unclear, the dealer should try to make things clear by asking the right questions and stopping the current action.
Right, because it's such an ambiguous statement that it could mean either one. Take my money that's already out there, or take my money, here's all my chips.
Right. Once again, and take my money is not an accepted phrase at the table. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. Right. You're talking to the dealer to take your chips. You're talking to the other player to take your chips. It doesn't imply call, bet, fold, or raise. It doesn't imply any of those, and therefore should not be acceptable. You're counting out the chips. Doesn't say whether he moved them an inch forward, but again, we get to make judgment calls, and we get to decide on the entire context, not any one single action. And counting out the chips in a very showy way and then turning your hand over and, okay, take my money. Combining all of that would fairly result in a call. I mean, it would truly be an unfair ruling to not let it be a call.
Right. And this is an assumption, but if in a friendly game, then it's probably not an angle, but it certainly has all the signs of a potential angle for sure.
Yes.
And so my question to you, would you rule on that differently based on if the player had played in your room for a long time and he's done these kinds of things repeatedly, does that mean he's going to get a stiffer penalty or rule it differently?
Potentially. Oh, we try to give the benefit of the doubt to everybody in the room. And those who have lost it do not get it back. So a player who has never done anything like this before, anything resembling an angle shot or potentially an angle shot, would generally be assumed to make a clean call or a clean play. Somebody who has a history of doing stuff like this, of adding more to the game than there should be, will generally rule against. And we try not to use the rules as a way to separate people from their money.
Right.
But sometimes you got to enforce calls in spots where they're fair and correct. So, yeah, past behavior, everything matters. Every single piece of the situation, every detail, everything adds to the context. And from there, that's how we get our decisions made.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Everything under the sun matters. A track record is definitely taken into account when we make decisions.
Yeah.
And it never fails. I mean, we'll get a player once in a while. I mean, all of a sudden, in 2 hours, you've made 4 floor calls at a table. And coincidentally, they've all involved the same one player with 4 other different players. And then he starts complaining that you're always deciding against him. It's like, this can't be a coincidence that we always have to come to the table to decide something regarding a situation that you are always involved in.
Right.
And generally, I make those players go away. I have no patience. If the floor is always being called to figure something out that's not behavioral regarding the same player all the time, then that player's a problem. And he's obviously trying to bend the rules of the game to his will so he can win without actually being a better player. That's not what this game is supposed to be about.
Right. That all makes sense. Will, I appreciate you sending that in as well. And Elliot, I appreciate you taking the time to do 2 different ones this week.
Hard work this week on the holidays.
Well, we'll do another one next week. How's that?
That'd be great.
All right. Talk to you then.
Looking forward to it.
Let's break it down with Hand of the Week.
Here we are with another Hand of the Week with Patrick. How's it going, man?
Joe, I'm good, man. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Absolutely. We got Santa out of the way. Now it's bringing in the new year. So
it is indeed. You know, it's a gambler's paradise, though. I was talking to some of my buddies, you know, that are sports gamblers. It's we got football basically every day from now until the Super Bowl. So
that's true.
Life is still very good.
So we need to mention also Jackpot Digital, obviously our Hand of the Week sponsor, and their electronic tables are popping up everywhere.
Oh, they are. And I was literally just about to tell you. So my sister was telling me that she's going out to Vegas for some kind of resorts. She works for resorts and clubs, city clubs. They're going out for a conference. And I was telling her about these tables. I was like, listen, I was like, my guy is literally sponsored by one of these, you know, these brand new tables. And I was trying to tell her about it, you know, because she plays her normal game. She's like, you know, sits there and plays, you know, blackjack or craps or anything. But I was like, I'm going to get a list after we're done recording of where these tables are and see if she can make it out there. Because even she said, she was like, I don't think they're putting us up right directly on some of, like, I don't know where it is on the strip. But she said she'd go try it out. So now we might have firsthand info from my sister to see what she has to say from a novice point of view.
Nice. Make sure that she tries all of the features, like, you know, the prop bets and all of that too. It'll be awesome.
I'll have to teach her a little bit before she goes out.
The novice becomes the teacher. Fair enough. Well, hey, we have a hand of the week this week. It's sent in by Josh Adams. And Josh is playing 2-5.
Okay.
And he has $700 in his stack.
Doing all right.
We are going to be in the big blind.
Okay.
Under the gun limps. And then it folds around to the small blind who completes. So we're in the big blind with the king of clubs, queen of clubs. What do you want to do there?
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I'm definitely putting more in here. I'm probably going 15.
Okay. I mean, that's three times the big blind.
Yep.
I'm probably raising it up a little bit more than that. Yeah, I'll put in three times the big blind plus one big blind per limper. So I would go 25.
Okay. Makes sense. I got you.
Josh, he raises to 20. So just a... right in between us.
he's got the exact same mindset, just along those lines.
Yeah. Under the gun calls, the small blind calls. So we have three to the flop.
All right.
The pot's $60. And it is six of diamonds, 10 of spades, 7 of spades. The small blind checks.
Mm.
And the action is on us. What do you think?
I'm probably checking as well. I'm going to try to see another card for free. I mean, I don't like that anymore. I mean, still feel pretty good about our hand, but, you know, you don't pair anything up. There's nothing suited for us. There's two spades out there. Yeah, checks are good by me.
Yeah, I think the ranges that we can put our players on definitely include some 8-9 suited, which they would then check to us. Yep. To get us to put more money in, right? So we're also out of position, three-handed, completely missed that flop. And it's,
I mean, just, honestly, there was nothing.
Yeah, and honestly, that flop is really bad for any hand that we would have been raising pre-flop. So I just check here.
Okay, yeah, we're on the same page. Yeah. Tell us our friend is as well.
No, Josh C bets to $20, and under the gun and button both call, which is probably not great news.
No, I wouldn't think so.
The pot's 120, and the turn is the 8 of spades. The small blind checks to us.
Please tell me he checks. Because that's what you should. That's what you definitely should do. Is
right, check. Right. Yeah, I'm done for sure. Yeah, there's not a lot to say about that one. Like, I'm done. Josh. Yeah. Josh checks. So good deal.
There we go. That's what I like to hear, Josh.
I thought for sure he was gonna muscle up like a big bet here, but he checks. Now it's under the gun that bets out $75.
Okay.
The small blind calls.
See ya. Yeah,
me too. I'm done. Just fold.
Yeah, you've got nothing. I mean, just going back real quick, like you said, the hands that we can make them on, you know, pre-flop are right there. Your 8-9 suited, your 9-10 suited, your 9s, your 8s. I mean, anything within that realm is right there. And guess what's not? Clubs and kings and queens.
Right. Yeah, you just fold and watch this one play out for sure. But yeah. But Josh flicks in the call.
Well, it wouldn't be a hand of the week if we didn't. Let's see some fireworks.
So what does that make our pot? 225 plus the 120. So 345 in the pot. And the river is an offsuit. Five. The 5 of clubs, to be exact. And the small blind checks again. I mean, it didn't do anything for us, so.
We don't have anything. I mean, we have king high, against easily a pair of some sorts, if nothing less, right? Like, what are you making this guy? I mean,
obviously, one of those two have something. They've called, yeah. Small Blind has called every street and Under the Gun bet out on the turn. So why would we do anything but check here? But
yeah,
Josh sees this as an opportunity. He says, I bombed the river for my remaining stack.
Ouch.
The read I had on Under the Gun and Small Blind was that they will not call with less than the nuts once all of the big chips start to get out there. Under the Gun and Small Blind could only call the shove out of position with the nuts. He says, the thing is, Small Blind had done nothing but check, call the entire hand, and when he checked the third time, I knew he wouldn't have the nuts. Under the Gun can't call light, or else he torches money. So
I get what he's saying. All right, let me validate that for a second. I get what he's saying. I think you might be a little off. I mean, at least in my opinion on kind of the reads. But, you know, again, he's sitting at the table.
Well, I'll say this. First of all, Josh, you didn't put that information in for us to have in the original description. So we couldn't make a decision based on that information, right? That you're talking True. About with Under the Gun and Small Blind. But even if you put that info in there, I think you still shouldn't call the turn. Then shoving the river is a complete gamble.
Yeah.
But he says, Under the Gun folded almost immediately, and Small Blind started talking to himself, trying to get a tell out of me. He said something about, I feel pretty certain I have you beat. Small Blind eventually folded and told me later he had two pair.
Joe, it's a Christmas miracle. All right, for future reference, at least from my end, I think you'll agree with me too. For ones that get sent in, give us some of that information beforehand. I still don't think personally, Joe, that I play that hand any different than what I recommended earlier. I'm still out of there.
100%.
I love, Josh, you taking that down. I mean, that's a read on those guys that you had at the table and touche, like clapping, hands up, you know, well done. Hats off to you, dude.
Well, Josh says, I later put this into a solver, and it says that the play was way worse by percentages than I thought it would be. So my question is, with the reads that I had, would this really be that bad of a play? And I'll say this. I'll say this. I'm really glad that it worked out for you. But if you're going to bluff king, queen of clubs in that spot, then you're basically bluffing 100% of your range. And that's only going to work sometimes. But if it doesn't work, you lose it all. So,
yeah,
I think in this particular case, I mean, if you go if you want to go the bluff route, here's my suggestion. Maybe you bet 2/3 pot. Then if they call, that saves you some money. And it looks like you want a call. To me, the shove looks like ace of spades or king of spades that missed, right? So you were trying to get there with the nut flush and you missed. And I've talked about this all the time on the Hand of the Week, but you have to tell a consistent story. And in this case, what story are we telling? What hands do we have that are going to call on the turn and then overbet shove on the river? I think if I'm the small blind with two pair, I'm probably calling this one on you. So
yeah,
the fact that the small blind had to talk to himself whether to fold or not with two pair. I don't think you get another one of those through that night anyway. So
yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Again, I'll give Josh his due diligence on the read itself on those guys, but I think there was I think there was more to it than you just having the read on them in that instance. I mean, if he's got anything other, I mean, two pair is two pair, but I mean, if he's got anything else, he's calling you every day. But again, he had the read on him, so.
Yeah, I mean, Josh, I'm super glad that it worked out for you. I just don't think it's the right line, and I think the solver is right in this situation. It's not good. Like the call on the turn is probably worse than the shove on the river, to be honest.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's that. I'm so glad that you took it down. We don't get a lot of hands of the week where somebody actually won, so it's always good to see those. And
absolutely.
So if anyone has a hand of the week that they would like Patrick and I to break down, send it to podcast@anyupmagazine.com. And Patrick, appreciate you, man.
Absolutely. You have a good one, and we will see you next week in the new year.
All right. Sounds good.
It's time for Joe's One Outer.
2023. What an incredible year for poker. The EPT, the WSOP, and WPT all had record-breaking series this year. Seemed like every tournament series that existed crushed guarantees. 2023 also brought a whole new explosion of content for poker. There seem to be more and more poker vloggers that are joining the already large list. Walking through the halls of big poker events, you can't help but see tons of people videoing themselves, talking about a big moment or a big hand. Then there's the Game of Gold that caught the attention of viewers. It was a 12-episode battle between some of poker's biggest personalities. Speaking of big personalities, though, we also lost a legend this year in Doyle Brunson. His wife passed along not long after, too. One player lied about having cancer to play in the WSOP, while Cody Daniels is still battling his chronic illness. When Daniels was knocked out of the main event in 635th place, though, he gave his lucky charm, a piece of pyrite or fool's gold, to the player that knocked him out, and that nugget kept getting passed from player to player until it reached the final photo to be immortalized forever. Hopefully, Daniel Wiseman will be able to bring that rock back with him in 2024. Those are just a few of the highlights from an incredible year in poker. 2024 has big shoes to fill, but honestly, I have a feeling it's not going to disappoint. That's today's One Outer, and that's today's show. I'll see you next week, A-Team. And until then, I'll see you at the tables.
The Annie Up Podcast is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call the show at 540-339-7741. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to editor@AnnieUpMagazine.com.